now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my special guest is a dear friend, Evie Lorgan. Evie really needs no introduction. Evie and I have worked with one another for lo these many decades now, and in truth, we've always been connected at the soul level, and I'm really pleased to bring her back to the show because we have a lot of information to bring out today, a lot of key points that we want to hit on. So without any further ado, Evie, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Oh, thank you, James. It's a pleasure to speak with you again, and it's always nice to talk about things that we both remembered together as we researched over the years, and with the new things that are coming up with deeper insights of how to make connections with things about repetitive things that are resurfacing, but in a different way. So I think it's important that we could just kind of share whatever's happening now and see where we go with it and bring up relevant points that you'd like to, you know, bring up.
Yes. So. And one of the key points that we want to touch on today is the importance of discernment, the importance of what our mission is and how it's going to crystallize itself in our consciousness. Speaking from an alien abductee MyLab perspective, a lot of us have undergone preparation, if you will, for one of a number of different contingencies that were supposed to unfold sometime in the future, right? And one of them was a tyrannical global dictatorship descending down upon the whole planet, right? Which we're seeing play out right now. So at this time more than ever, as small sample size to be sure, but I've spoken to a number of people like us, quite frankly, and it seems like their psi abilities are starting to amp up again. There is a tremendous amount of frequency jamming to prevent us from remembering our dreams, prevent us from having lucid dreams, prevent us from remembering the ops or the experiences that we've been on. And it's a challenge to break through that. But the point of relevance is as our abilities start to amp up and we begin to overcome all the jamming and all the interference, how do we discern? Because we will start to get more guidance, insight, telepathic messages, whatever the case may be. How do we know what we're getting is really from divine spirit and not from some masquerading Draco or Mantis being that's trying to fool us into rolling over and accepting this whole agenda? So, we had a lot to talk about before we even started recording, which for obvious reasons we didn't record. But take it wherever you want to go, Evie, and bring in whatever points you feel relevant.
Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and say that what I had come up for me this week, and actually what we discussed earlier, was how in the past, in certain alien love bite cases, in my original love bite book, there was a case named John and Nadine, okay? And it was actually two couples who were involved with each other, and two of the individuals in two different couples were the alien abductees who were set up with each other through a series of interactions and orchestrations and events where there was clear signs and signals of alien interference, as well as their technologies of surveillance and influence, missing time, and the classic alien abduction markers that we knew from, let's say, the early researchers such as Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber and Dr. Carla Turner and Barbara Bartholek and myself, where we actually come to recognize the markers and the signs and symptoms of someone who's had lifelong alien visitations or abductions depending on their situation. So in this particular love bite case, in the love bite book, because so many of them are chock full of information that I even review over the years, and then I see similarities that start popping up later, 20 something years later, that is often overlooked by current researchers or people. They just don't know, because they have a short memory of, let's say, the lesser known researchers who didn't hit, let's say, their fame years or get the large scale opinion of the majority, what appears to be the majority. And this seems to be something that I think has come up, where, you know, you have a, I don't want to call it mainstream, but let's say something in the bell curve, where you have a larger segment of the population that will tend to agree with a certain researcher or a certain perspective or narrative about even the alien abduction phenomena or the truth movement. And then you might have a few researchers who are more maybe on the fringe or the margins. They're not the super popular ones who had their, you know, 2 years of fame or 15 minutes of fame or whatever it is, who have key truthful elements that are often overlooked or omitted or just not really taken seriously, such as the things that Dr. Carla Turner brought up and Barbara Bartholik and myself and you. So anyway, to make a long story short, the reason why I brought up this case of John and Nadine, which is on page 144 of the Love Bite book, had to do with two abductees who were set up together as children. And they actually lived a block from each other when they were growing up, and then didn't really know each other as kids consciously, right? And then met later as adults who were married to other partners who like worked together at the same company. And then the interconnections and the memory activations occurred as they met each other. And also there was an activation, you know, because we talked about the activation will happen sometimes where the memories come up suddenly. And for this John male figure, and I don't think that's his real name, when he saw the communion book, no, it was a Debbie Jordan book that was the Bud Hopkins book. And in that book, there were symbols, alien symbols, and also that had to do with musical tones. And so when he heard certain musical tones and saw the alien symbols, it activated memories of abductions and missing time, which proceeded into the next phase of his life, where he would meet the love bite setup partner. Okay. So long story short, they kind of go through these dramas where, you know, they're two different couples married to two different people, then they meet and they have memories. And then he has a strong telepathic and intuitive connection to the one he was pre-bonded with in childhood and teenage years. And one of the reasons that the aliens told them, which was really not well understood, but we realize later now, that it had to do with both of the abductees recalled being told by the aliens that they must learn how to communicate telepathically and intuitively, so that they would do this because they would soon become separated. Because in the future, basically, communications would be going down and they would be used as communication pairs in future scenarios. It's just kind of like a pre-planned training process where people who had these experiences had more telepathic and intuitive abilities to perceive aliens, and telepathic communication with others that could be switched on, or communication with others that they're pre-bonded with or they were abducted together with, they don't realize until later. So some of that I think is starting to come up now. And I was reminded of that based on what a case that we knew together, the Dan Sherman case, who was a military abductee who was trained by both military and direct gray alien handlers who trained him specifically for intuitive communication that was tested along with military to be used not only for current, whatever he was being used for, but for future communications when the communications would go down in the future. So this kind of reminded me of, like, there's more reasons to this that are now coming to pass, I think, that people are being activated. And of course, now I'm getting messages that are popping on Telegram. Sorry about that. That always happens. Like I'll get phone calls when I'm like on a show or something. Anyway, so that was the one case I wanted to bring up where it brought up the communications going down so that we will need to rely on more intuitive communication processes. And I think there's something more to that, not just that communications would go down, but that as certain draconian measures are taking place as we speak in multiple countries in the world, where censorship is, of course, a primary problem for people who want to speak the truth on different social media or communication processes, and they are being directly censored and ghost shadow banned and not being able to make money or being harassed, all sorts of things, so that they can no longer speak the truth of their opinions about things. And it's like we're moving towards what was warned by people that we know personally, that it's in the Love Bite book of future scenarios that could play out. And I think this was based on not only what these people in these secret projects, their handlers, right, that they knew was either being planned by certain elite groups, right, who are running the planet along with certain interdimensional beings who are their primary handlers and controllers, but also looking glass technology that would show permutations of possibilities based on the current timeline. And then they're shown future projections, and then they're trained what to do in those future projected scenarios, such as massive social unrest and war situations, UN vehicles coming in, different situations. So I think some of that is actually starting to come to pass as we see things roll out. So that we must be mindful of communications that they're always being monitored for certain keywords and certain belief systems that would go against a particular narrative that, like in the old days, oh, we're just being, crazy fringe, UFO nuts and conspiracy theorists, blah, blah, blah. But with certain laws that have been implemented, now they will be perceived as something that would be perceived a threat in another capacity, which could throw us into camps of concentration camps, or to be concerned a threat that really there's no threat. It's just that the laws are proceeding towards greater and greater restrictive capacities, which we already know, right? It's like Nazi Germany on steroids, right? I don't need to explain myself anymore. So what do you say about that, James, in terms of what we both remember with the people that we know, things that they were shown about the future and how it's playing out?
The importance of maintaining comms. For example, satellite phones are all the rage now. And thanks to the dedicated efforts of some investigators, podcasters, what have you, pointing out the importance of these, right? And it just goes to underscore the whole importance of maintaining comms with people you need to maintain comms with when the phone system goes down and when the grid goes down. We were working back in the day on different means of maintaining comms psychically. What you did, because you were way ahead of the curve compared to a lot of people as far as developing methods of attaining lucidity, if you remember, you even wrote papers about it, right? And then one of the things that you did was when you become lucid, and there were different cues that you set up for yourself to cue you into lucidity in a dream. And when you became lucid in a dream, you would do things like you would manifest a telephone, you would call me up, or you would do other things, and then or like for call me out, for example. And then I would manifest in your particular dreamscape. And on one occasion, I just started telling you all kinds of things, private, embarrassing things, I think even Love Bite related things, of which I may have been, keeping close hold until, a certain time. But it just goes to show that from a soul group, soul bonded level, And I, you know, I have no qualms about bearing my soul to you, even at a conscious level, because we're so close. But when you did that back in the day, and then when I showed up, and you even said I was wearing a suit at the time, which was funny because, you know, a lot of presentations I've done over the years, I used to wear suits a lot. So yeah. I pop up and I start telling you all this stuff. And then it goes off on a tangent where I start talking about other things like love bite related stuff, which is kind of embarrassing. Point of relevance is it shows that we can maintain comms in that doesn't require even satellite phones. And I think, and I've been having discussions with a colleague of mine, my lab here in Australia, he goes by the pseudonym Logan, and he's been talking about the frequency jamming a lot of us have been getting and how it relates directly to weather modification, raising the temperature, the heat in certain places, the chemtrailing and all that, and how whether it's an intended effect or a byproduct of that whole weather modification process, it interferes with our dream recall. It interferes with our ability to remember what ops we've been on and, you know, experiences we've had, right? So we need to develop secure means of psychically, telepathically linking with each other. And that case study of John and the gal that he was bonded with is an example of this. Because energetically, we know from a heart center perspective, we can maintain comms because our heart center is such a powerful dynamo, electromagnetic dynamo. Look what they did with Ted Rice from an inverse perspective, where he saw them in that scenario when they were on the playground, taken out there by the ETs. It just shows how insidious they are playing with our hearts in that fashion, where they got some kind of wand-like device and they drew out some heart center energy from Ted and from the girl, and they mixed them and bonded them together to forge that connection, right?
Yeah. And it was a one-sided love bite in that particular one.
That's right. It was a one-sided love bite. It was unrequited. It was not reciprocated. And so the feeling of unrequited love and of just, you know, hopelessness and what have you, it just really intensified. And it, for him, it lasted for years, right?
Poor guy. What was interesting is even in that case, I just stumbled across it today. And like, sometimes I review cases because there's things that I didn't notice that before. But even in the John and Nadine case, who was the one who were two different couples who were bonded as children, who lived actually a block apart and didn't even know it until they met years later and ended up working at the same company. And it was just like one of these synchronicities. Oh, you lived only a block from me when I was a kid. I didn't even know. But what happened is they probably took a group of kids from that one neighborhood and then did a bonding thing and took him to a school, because in the Ted Rice case, like in the early days, I think they were able to get away with this maybe without being detected as much as maybe these days. But in the Ted Rice case, he, along with at least a dozen other children who are about middle school age, like 14 years old, were taken. And then the craft took them somewhere near a schoolyard where they bonded several, you know, teenagers and some adults all together in that one locale. So it was a group abduction that took place where many people were bonded together. So it wasn't just the one. I mean, it was actually, they do it as a group, and how they all turn out later, I don't know. But oftentimes it's in a certain location, like, oh, it could have been someone you grew up with and you only lived like a mile away from, and then later in life. But that's not always the case. But in these two cases, they lived close together as children and didn't maybe know it, didn't actually realize it until later.
So it's an example. It shows how that bonding energetically, psychically, etc., can be forged, if you will. In this case, in these cases, it's for malign purposes, for energy harvesting and emotional harvesting, what have you. But the point of relevance is, if they can do that for some insidious purpose, which benefits them at our expense, then certainly it means that we could do the same.
Yes.
A case in point, the example I just gave of how you were able to become lucid, call me out, and then, you know, in a completely candid moment, I begin telling you all this trippy, mushy love bite stuff, which I did, you know, was probably holding back on, you know, at a conscious level. But it just shows that at a at a spiritual soul level, that level of connection. And you brought up the Dan Sherman case, which was absolutely important. To this day, I feel that story just does not get the level of interest and mileage that it should get, because he was an abductee. His mother was an abductee. His mother was inducted into the program, the NSA, Zeta Reticuli, Intuitive Communicator Program. While he was still in the womb, he was being genetically upgraded in order to be able to be an intuitive communicator. From the moment he was born, these shadowy figures would come in and out of his life and interact with his mother, getting him to go to this school, getting him to join the Air Force, sliding him over to the NSA part of the Air Force. Eventually, he winds up in this gray program, which was referred to as Project Preserved Destiny. And the reason it was called Project Preserved Destiny was he was told when he was being briefed into the program that there's going to come a point in time. This is the early 1970s when he was told this. There's going to come a point in time when the grid's going to go down, communications are going to go down, but they're still going to need to maintain comms with at least one particular race of ETs, and in this case, a faction of the Zeta Reticulians, whether it's the same one, that the same group that provided the technology at S4 that Bob Lazar worked on, because in the briefing papers he read, the beings that provided the sport model and some of the other craft at S4 were from Zeta Reticuli. And we know that there has been a longstanding connection between deep black elements of the military and some of the Zetas, right?
Yeah.
So
they even steered them. It's like it starts with being an abductee in the family line, and then they're steered into these alphabet soup agencies, and then sheep dipped into one program that might be like a level up from the deeper program they're in. So a lot of people, they don't understand the connections between those who are actually steered into certain careers and certain alphabet soup agencies. And it's because they're already abductees from a family line thing. So I don't think this is, so many people think, oh, well, it's all human and it's all MK Ultra, but I don't think that's true. I think that there are direct, quote, alien handlers and controllers who are working with humans who may be intermediaries in projects, but they don't realize that the upper hand goes to these interdimensional beings that are the handlers, at least in many cases, you know.
And more surface level type, or what I had previously perceived the surface level type podcasters, investigators, researchers, they're starting to see the non-human element, the non-human controlling factor behind all of this, because they see that there is a blatant anti-human, anti-creation, exterminationist agenda at work that's just come right out into the open. And you talked about, you touched on earlier in this discussion about how this hybridization program, how particular hybrids are being created for specific purposes. And I would say that the hybrids at this point run the gamut between vast majority of them being the sheepanoid bovine kind of type, just go along, believe whatever the idiot box says, believe whatever the master authority figures say. And then some of them wind up becoming defenders of the systems, of the system. Right. They become mask holes, right? They become members of Sauron's army, if you will, from a Lord of the Rings perspective, whether they realize it or not. And then you have the other end of the spectrum, where you have all these bureaucrats, you have all these people in these institutions that are hell-bent on not only asserting dominance and control, but on absolutely culling the Earth's population and plugging everyone in, whether people survive this or not, into some kind of a hellish, nether-dimensional AI kind of world or virtual environment. So
I don't want to interrupt, but that was brought up by Saratoga Ocean. I watch her videos now and then. She has some interesting topics, and she mentioned the AI consciousness versus, she called it alien versus extraterrestrial. Of course, we use different terms based on the behaviors and forms of these beings. But one of the things that she means by artificial intelligence alien that's not human would be, it's more anti-life, anti-nature, anti-creation, intellectual, Nazi, technological. There's a energy signature of that, which I can feel, or anybody who has a good heart and soul, who's, let's say, connected to the Holy Spirit or connected to their divine eternal now with love, and they're connected to nature, they're going to recognize the signature of that through primary, you know, psychopathic, narcissistic, super technological, but hell bent on, you know, destruction. And, you know, the usual agendas run by like the super obvious, you know, cabal, black magic types that are run by, like, you know, they're not human, right? And that's like the obvious ones, that they have the type of psychopathic, narcissistic, cold, intelligent, lacking a heart, lacking empathy, and you know, not liking life. They're anti-life creation and wanting everything to be hooked up to this neural link of artificial intelligence and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's obvious that that's the signature. But this reminds me of what Barbara Bartholuk had discovered in some of the abduction cases. And I won't say all of them, right? But what would she call the breeding out of love program, which some of that, it seems to manifest. And I don't know if this has to do with hybrids or certain genetic augmentations over time and with certain conditioning that may yield a certain profile that has a type of heart absent, almost a autistic Asperger, super geek archetype of a, well, you can call it a Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, man boy, super genius, but lacking love and empathy and just like totally like robotic AI, like, oh, it's kind of run by something else. And that's what it feels like. And I don't know if that's being engineered over the generations to have that type of personality profile signature that is more prone to an AI entrainment takeover of their consciousness, which to me, that is a concern of, if we want discernment and we want to get back on track to our divine, human, eternal now, Holy Spirit connection, we want to be able to discern and get off that track and to return to a more empathic, organic, love-based, true discernment-based state of being. So I don't think all people who have been in these projects who might be augmented and, quote, maybe they're hybridized or something, they're not all bad people, right? That there's some who, like the Ted Rice case, because in his case, I was just reviewing it again because it's so good. And it's too bad. I don't even know if Masquerade of Angels, Carla Turner's book about his entire case and life study, I don't even know if it's available. I just documented a certain segment of it in my Love Bite book. But in that, he was told by the aliens who had taken him and cloned him out at 8 years of age, where the one where the tornado came and there was UFO lights in the tornado was missing time. And then they took him and then they cloned him out into another body. And then that the alien in charge, who was this tall, thin figure, basically said that there's a switching out procedure happens maybe several times during the lifetime of people. And this has been going on since his mother and like a couple of generations. So they had been doing this for several generations until they create the right augmented type of profile that they're seeking for future generations. And that was what he was told. And so, to make a long story short, in his case, he was steered into a life based on his experiences and his natural innate psychic abilities, which is often a very natural aspect of the profile of someone who's been through these kinds of experiences. And it doesn't mean they're like bad people channeling demons or anything like that. It just means they have a natural ability. But what happens is they're often steered into, let's say, the popular flavor of the week of the new age I'm going to call it the white checkerboard square Luciferian con of white light spirituality, which is really diverted from the Holy Spirit. Okay. And they still can use their abilities towards channeling these alleged benevolent beings who give them messages, but they tend to divert from truth. And so this was proven in his case over time with the groups that were like, let's say, the channelers of the day that would give him the spirit guide messages. Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't worry about, you know, what happened and that trauma. Well, that's just negative. You know, you're being spiritually retarded. You should just focus on the love and the light, and that this is really for your own good. And blocking out the true memory of the truth of what happened, that the trauma would tell him if he listened to his feelings and the original intuition, which is like, wait a minute, there's something like not right here. I'm not being negative. But they keep telling you, well, you're just being negative. You're being spiritually retarded. You shouldn't focus on that. You should only focus on da 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 da. And so these people actually steer people away from the spirit of truth by not listening to their inner heart of what I call, as a therapist, we must have true trauma resolution and really listening to your heart and your spirit about what's really happening, like the whole ball of wax, the good, bad, ugly, whatever, and be able to reconnect with something that is more original than, let's say, a certain narrative that is the politically correct or the spiritually correct of the whatever is the popular flavor of the week, or even the popular narrative of now what is popular. Well, what's popular is what people come up with, some of these super soldier things and the 20 and back. And I'm not saying these things aren't true, but what I see is some of the same themes being used to keep directing them in a certain direction, as opposed to, you know, what are these messages? Where are they coming from? And what are they directing people towards? And what kind of belief systems are they trying to direct people towards that could be part of an alien artificial intelligence entrained belief system that will direct them towards something else that we don't want? So I don't mean to be, quote, fear-based about it. It's just that I can see how this can easily happen if that true discernment and spiritual maturity and trauma resolution does not occur in the way that really needs to happen for people to really uncover the truth of their original beingness. You see what I'm saying? How that plays out sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. And what I see are variations of the same theme, the same pathologies playing out in seemingly different topics, themes, and subjects. For example, so many New Agers, they talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. They profess to have a holistic, clean, natural life, meditating all the time and being one with nature, but they're some of the first ones to line up for the stab. They're some of the first ones to, when their mortality is seemingly threatened because of the nonstop 24/7 fear-mongering and the echo chamber, which develops from being around ignorant, stupid people, quite frankly, who are endlessly repeating the latest, you know, swerve or the latest curveball thrown by the fear-mongering corporate media, right? It's amazing how even contradictory information, which should set red flags to anyone with working common sense and an intact, semi-intact heart center. Oh, wait a minute. Now they're saying these stabs don't work. You're still going to be infectious. You're still going to spread. Well, then why are you taking them then, right? Why are you going to take them? So the New Agers, many of them, and a lot of the people that profess to a holistic, natural, spiritual life, because their mortality is threatened, they're one of the first to say, oh, suddenly they're fear-based, right?
It's a programming to, I mean, this, I don't mean to cut you off, but okay. I see this actually in how we've been culturally, even other cultures in the world, we're culturally Well, you shouldn't talk about anything negative, and you really don't want to talk about your real feelings. And if you're raised in a family where, you know, it's a dysfunctional one, where, you know, one of the parents is a narcissist or an addict or a workaholic, or they're working for a alphabet soup agency and they just can't tell the truth about their life or their work. And so you grow up with the assumption that, well, it's just not okay to speak the truth. It's not okay to talk about how you really feel. So many people who've been raised, well, you just don't talk about your real feelings, or men were taught not to talk about feelings or not to cry. They got to hold it in. Or it could be any number of conditioning where we have to shut down, like, hey, man, this doesn't feel right. This is wrong. I need to say something about it. I don't want to put up and shut up and just be nice and put on a smile, and they can't help it, and they're just doing it for their job. And like, no, this is wrong. This feels wrong. This is bad. We need to, let's make a correction here. And it's not being nitpicky. It's like, we must address these things, or the veil gets thicker and thicker and thicker until we no longer know how we feel, who we are. We get so confused that we're so easily misdirected into whatever someone wants us to believe. And it really is a form of not only conditioning, but, you know, I've said this before, it's a type of narcissistic cult abuse that has a specific objective and effect on people over time to, how does it work? Like in the early followers of, let's say, Jesus, and I believe in Jesus and that he had true power and truth, that I think a lot of what he really said and did was limited, so that not all could be known or even written about what he really was and what he really did and said. So that if there is an original group of original people who knew and were direct, I don't know, apostles, disciples, so that there would be a infiltration, right, of the group, a corruption, a perversion, and inversion of the original story or truth, so that by the time, you know, hundreds of years go by, you think the truth is one thing and it really might be the opposite, or a corrupted or diverted version, so that for people who really want to know the truth, we're getting a bare skeleton key of what might have been known in the original life of the original teacher. So it's up to us to have a direct connection with God and with whatever the original teacher was, to have a direct connection and then receive that truth as we are able to be able to switch back on the spirit of truth. So that goes into discernment of, well, what do we know about the messages we're receiving, or the visions, or the psychic, we'll receive a psychic message from somebody who's doing a tarot card reading, or a channeler or a healer who tells us this and that. And it's easy to get misled, even innocently, by people who are not direct connected and are actually listening to spin controlled or corrupted, perverted messages by other hierarchies. And it happens so insidiously that over time, then you could find out that, and this is what I find with a lot of my dark side of Cupid cases, where they think it's a twin flame. And it may be someone that they have a karmic connection with. And then that person is connected to a malign entity, like a draconian or a reptilian or some kind of vampiric entity that has taken partial possession or full possession of that person. And then they use that person to link to the other, to use their energy and their empathy to really kind of misdirect their lives and their energy in this love bite kind of situation. So a lot of it is these people who are hosted, they either don't know, or they don't have any power and control over how the entity is actually utilizing them as a kind of patsy, a spiritual patsy, right? To take advantage of other people's innocence and their love, to actually care for them and think that their love will heal them and cure them. And it doesn't, you know?
That's why the divine masculine has been hijacked. It was one of the first targets of this whole wretched agenda, because when I look out into our field, I look out on the society, it's mostly women that are speaking up. A lot of the males have been emasculated, neutered, or just eunuchs, basically. They have all the outward trappings of a tough guy, but they're walking around masked up, and they're just being obedient. And you talked earlier about the AI Luciferian entity overlay. And I agree with you that there are, I think it's the good hybrids that are going to help to get us out of this mess. Those that have the connection to divine source, the activated heart center, that have the DNA profile, the metaphysical innate capabilities from their genetic ET heritage, usually from more than one ET group. And that's why so many of them get hijacked and pulled into these black projects, right? Precisely for that reason.
Or it could be, I still think this goes back to, we could talk about this more, original lines that supposedly the Nag Hammadi library and some of these ancient traditions that were known from the days of Adam, even in some of the ancient Hebrew teachings where there was, they called it Sethian, but it was, like how Eve was, raped by the archontic reptilian serpent and then had the hybrid lines of Cain, for example. And then there were the ones that were the pure ones, like the daughter of Sophia was Zoe. And then the Sethian lines were the more pure ones that weren't tainted by the rape hybrid products of this whole archontic game that's been going on with humanity from the beginning. So that we have, we have hybrid lines. We have some that carry more of the signature of the more pure ones that are connected to the eternal more strongly than others. But I also believe that not all the hybrids, they're not all, quote, bad, that there's an aspect of how the eternal spirit can override those malign influences, even on an ancestral level. And that was one of the gifts that was given by Jesus Christ in history, so that when he came, he actually helped make a correction, because that's another part of the story which gets more complex. So it's not necessarily ET heritage. It could be that there's a more pure one that overrides and actually can, this is what I was told by an angel one time, but it's kind of weird, but was told that even though we might carry a certain genetic and ancestral bloodline thing that may not have the characteristics of what might have been some of the characteristics we want from the original lines, that if your spirit is strong enough from the eternal realm, it can change the genetic expression and literally change the bloodline from then on out, so that we can override genetic structure. Obviously, consciousness can, and spirit can also override that.
Yeah, Bruce Lipton talks about that all the time. Yeah.
Yes. And it's true.
It's absolutely true. And a lot of it goes back to the Breeding Out the Love program, which you referenced earlier, because we see the extremes of that, where the Luciferian AI overlay, the entity infestation overlay on so many bureaucrats. So on the one hand, you have so many people that have been, whether it's through hybridization, mass hybridization, whether it's through indoctrination, societal programming and brainwashing, to take on this bovine acceptance, just roll over and believe whatever they're told by perceived master authority figures. And then on the other hand, and it's all part of the same continuum, you have all these bureaucrats with their protocols, National Institutes of Health, putting forth these protocols of how to treat people. Oh, I'm just presenting with a cold. No, we've cycled up the threshold level for the PCR test. You've got it. And you have to go through the protocol. So they wind up intubating the poor guy to death. Right?
Oh, I know. It's really amazing. Like,
it's a chamber of horrors scenario where everything is conversion. People go in because they got a cold or, pneumonia, and then they just kill them en masse. But please continue.
No, it's just, even from a scientific level, I was told that, if you don't want to agree to this, that you really need to look for the appropriate loopholes based on a type of spiritual authority and permission, that even if you have the scientific evidence, right? I mean, I could have the scientific evidence, and I even worked with people who developed PCR and worked for labs where we did DNA hybridization, and we knew how you can get, you know, spurious false positives, and you can get poisoned, and working in a biohazard lab. And I mean, you know, so I know scientifically, you know, it's like, you don't even need to, I don't even need to go there. Okay. And even a scientist could figure this out. It's just, now I can't remember where I was going with this, but it's more of a mind control program of compliance.
Well, it is a mind control program of compliance because the doctors and the nursing staffs that are executing literally underlined three times executing these protocols and in effect executing the patients. Yeah. At some point, you would think that if there is an activated heart center or a semi-activated heart center at work, that it would override all the nonsense and gibberish and indoctrination and entities working through their conscious mind, mind. Because let me draw an example, okay? If someone told you, a perceived authority figure, say a fisherman, go to this watering hole, you'll catch more fish than you can ever dream of, right? And you go there, day after day after day, and it's always a dry hole. You never catch any fish. At some point, you say, you know what? There's no fish here. That guy is full of it. I'm going to go somewhere else. Now, just take that analogy and apply it to what's become these chamber of horrors, you know, these modern day hospitals, which it was all leading to that anyway. It was always leading in that direction because of the takeover of what's been described as Rockefeller medicine, which to me is Rockefeller reptile medicine. At some point, you would think that the hospital staff would say, well, we keep going through these protocols and we keep just killing these people over and over and over and over. Setting aside the fact that, you know, they get a bunch of money every time they misdiagnose these people over and over and over, right? At some point, you would think that just simple human compassion, which I think is what you're referring to when you talk about that original, uncorrupted, undiluted line, where we still have that human compassion, we still have that connection to divine source that acts as an internal navigation, internal compass, a moral compass, right?
It's actually a way to create discernment when it is not clear, because Even from a scientific perspective, I could understand the confusion even amongst scientists and physicians, because we have red herring science going out there. So there's people who are obfuscating different things, and then there's different factors involved that are not taken in consideration as part of the experiment, so that it appears one way, but then they're really introducing factors that they're not telling you about that may create the appearance of the red herring that will justify certain treatments or certain assumptions of a theory, which is really incorrect because all the different factors are being omitted from our perception and omitted in a way where people are innocently believing basically what's only being presented. So they're not exactly guilty of not following their Hippocratic oath. It's just that not all the terms and conditions are being laid out on the table, you know, for true observation.
There are these built-in erroneous assumptions, right?
Yeah.
Where people present to these chamber of horror type places for a normal kind of easily treated illness, but because of their programming, their lack of connection to source, their shut down heart center, and their inability, quite frankly, to stand up for themselves, they roll over, they allow their loved one to submit to these protocols, their loved one dies. And there's almost like this on some kind of spiritual level, almost this contractual bond between the perps and the would-be victims and the victims. You see, and it ties in with what you talked about earlier about the new age avoidance of anything negative. This has a direct correlation and a direct relation for countless millennia. Many First Nation cultures around the world had these taboos, and the taboos run all across the board. if you're a fisherman or if you're a hunter, oh, you can't do this, because if you do this, then the animals won't come. They won't get caught up in your snare. So don't do that. Okay, that's mm-hmm. negative magic, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like these taboos are all in place. They've been there in the subconscious at the soul memory level all along. So it then it gets transmuted into the New Age movement. So they don't call them taboos when you want to talk about anything negative, right? But they are taboos. And the same thing applies to these so-called treatments, right? It's taboo to question an authority figure.
Yeah, or shaming.
Know, or yeah, shaming. Like, so because
yeah,
the authority figure takes on the mantle of the high priest. It takes on the mantle of the person who literally, because of the ego activation, narcissism, and I worked in medical education. I've seen these residents, right? I've interacted with them. And right up from the get-go, they've got the God complex, power over life and death, and just how it just powers them. And just, you know, the ability to make decisions and do things, which means life or death for people, right? So what happens is, continuing in this ongoing example, the doctors and the medical staff, because of this indoctrinated, programmed AI narcissistic overlay going on, no, the protocols are the protocols, but you got to go through it. Yeah. Patient dies again and again and again. And because there's no connection, because they've been totally taken over, right? Yeah. By AI, yeah. Luciferian entities, what have you. It's like next. There's no emotional consequence because they're lacking the frontal lobe capacity. They have no compassion. Everything is all about control. Everything is all about giving vent to their narcissistic personalities with the entities pushing everything behind. So
normalized. Yeah,
they've normalized it. So at some point, no one's saying, well, this doesn't seem to be working. We go through these protocols and they keep dying, right? So right off the bat, you see that it is a Luciferian system, an anti-life system, an anti-creation system. And that is a big part of the problem that we're dealing with. That this is inability to discern simple things like right and wrong, right? It's just absent.
Yeah, in fact, that was something that was brought up by someone I had interviewed years ago that you know very well, that the conditioning was to basically turn around the moral compass so that it was a more easy takeover of the person to be utilized for the agenda as an operative or however that, you know, like even in torture in the MK Ultra and some of these programs, they try to take that out of you so that you make a better assassin
reverse the moral compass.
Yeah, and basically. It's really sad because not everybody would want to do that. And a lot of times they are forced and it's not their fault and they could come back to their senses and, you know, turn around. But I think it is a heart thing. And there's something about a lack of discernment that, well, I mean, I think there's biblical things like a delusion is put over the minds of people to actually make sense of and not actually perceive something that is obvious right in front of them, because the heart, wisdom, natural awareness of the eternal spirit, which the Holy Spirit can indwell in, is not present. So you're easily shifted to that archontic artificial intelligence narrative. It's almost like a deductive reasoning, but it becomes insane. And it becomes more and more narcissistic and psychopathic over time. But we're not really seeing it play out. A lot of people, they're not recognizing it. I mean, it's not just, quote, New Agers, because I've seen this in other belief systems, other cultures, other personality types where, you know, it's either their destiny to do what they're doing because of who they are and what their original soul purpose is. And then other people, they wake up and they were on a different trajectory. But we can talk about that more in terms of what I think is the consequence of making certain choices that aligns with what would be the artificial intelligence narrative, following orders into that future.
Yes, because nothing is written in stone yet, and there's nothing to stop all these people that have allowed themselves to be stampeded over the cliff. The problem is so many of them, so many of the latter, want to drag everyone else with them too, right? Oh, no.
Misery loves company. What's that? Isn't that right? Misery loves company.
Misery loves company. Oh, I'm in fear for my life. I want to be saved. I want to drag you down into the abyss with us, right? And, you know, fear, animalistic fear will do that. Mm-hmm. And the constant fear-mongering is shunted people, has shunted people into the R complex, into a lower frequency bandwidth, if you will, into their headspace, which is a happy hunting ground for all these entities. Look what's happening for people who've taken the stab. Many of them are saying, I no longer feel a connection to God. I'm hearing these voices in my head. Well, surprise, surprise, right? Mm-hmm. Among other things. And in the time we got left, and I want to touch on this because you brought it up briefly during this discussion and the time we have left in this first segment. And we talked more about it in depth prior to recording. We see the same themes, the same pathologies that have played out in the New Age movement, which really has a direct correlation and harkens back to ancient taboos going way back when. You don't do this because something, as a consequence, something bad will happen. And fast forward to the New Age movement. Don't talk about anything negative because it'll be, and then the entities working through all these psychics and all these other people that are malignly influenced are reinforcing that message, right? Their guide, mm-hmm. so to speak. It's what they try to do to Ted Rice.
Yeah.
Well, we see a variant of that, really two sides of the same coin. In the elements now of the MyLab truth movement, for lack of a better term, where we see a lot of misdirection, a lot of obfuscation, a lot of manipulation. And to be sure, and I would agree with you, some of these people that, you know, claim to have been in some of these 20 and back programs, what have you, I believe something really happened to them from a project person, MyLab perspective. Mm-hmm. Whether they recall things exactly 100%, which is always the bugaboo for people like us, how yeah. much we can remember and what little we can remember, how much of it is objectively 100% valid and not yeah. subject to any kind of misdirection, mind yeah. control, manipulated yeah. feelings, whatever the case may be. So mm-hmm. what I'm seeing with that whole movement, it's become kind of a subpopulation. And we've been able to watch it develop because, you know, we were some of the original people that had gone through this yeah. stuff. We were in comms with some of the original investigators, Candy Turner and you know, people like that in the high desert of Southern California, Diane Johnson and others. Right? Yeah. So we had a different perspective on it. It seems to me that that whole sub-movement within the MyLab movement, if you will, one of the things that it's lacking is not only discernment, but the warrior ethos seems to be absent in it, where they get caught up in the glamour, they get caught up in the superficiality of it all, instead of saying, wait a minute, you know, yes, we've had these experiences. What can we do to heal? What can we do to reintegrate? What can we do once we fully reintegrate to just end this whole thing, right? Because if they're going to talk the talk, they need to walk the walk, backing it up by using all these powers and abilities they claim to have
yeah.
and use it to throw a spanner in the works of this whole system. That's what they should be doing. I think this is just my perspective. It's just me thinking. No one else has to believe this. But if one really has these latent metaphysical powers, at some point, instead of just constantly allowing themselves to be utilized as a tool, as a pawn, to advance this Luciferian AI agenda, and glorying in that, ooh, I was part of this woo-woo mind control project. At some point, one should say to himself or herself, you know what? I'm going to reintegrate. I'm going to heal. And they're going to be sorry they ever pulled me into this program, because I'm going to make life miserable for them. I'm going to dismantle. I'm going to disrupt this whole system, yeah. Right? And if yeah. enough my labs and project people develop that mindset, working either individually or in small cells, maybe we can turn this thing around, right?
Yeah, because they're the ones who know the inside workings of the hierarchy of control, and then actually the advanced technologies that are being used above and beyond political outward appearances and the down line of how it's playing out. It's so that's what I see is missing sometimes, is that, you know, we see the political play out and it's, you know, communist that or socialist that, or, you know, and they see it within the lower level, the five senses kind of way of viewing it. And then they're not being able to see it from other perspectives. So, or maybe just applying, I think, certain spiritual laws to how they got where they were got. Like, I think there's certain spiritual permissions and doorways which allowed them to get into these projects in the first place, and that they're lacking the knowledge of how that takes place. And then they're believing the narratives of what their, maybe their handlers and controllers tell them about history and about, well, the true nature of the universe. Well, how do you know if what they're telling you is true, if they've been torturing you all your life, you know, as a operative in these dark fleet or whatever it is?
Yes, they're completely lacking credibility.
This is the history of the universe, and, you know, Jesus was really a false narrative and this and that. And they always seem to like steer you away from the Holy Spirit. And then this whole other huge narrative of the universe and the solar system and this group and that group. And like, wait a minute. You're like, how's the healing process going of your integration of your eternal now spirit? And is this showing the fruit on the tree of, you know, the humility and the generosity and the compassion and the real supernatural abilities? Or are they just trying to sell themselves for psychic readings and YouTube views? And I don't know, I just have to question. Well,
a lot of that has happened. There's nothing wrong with utilizing one's innate abilities to help others heal, to help others develop greater understanding of whatever it is you know, they're going through. But it's turned into a market kind of industry where, okay, I'm a MyLab, I'm a project person, I'm this, I'm that, and the other. And far be it for me to question one's right to engage in the free enterprise system, which is rapidly going away now with the way they're just wiping out all these businesses left, right, and center. So I'm 100% for free enterprise. But if it's coming from that standpoint, if it's coming from a relatively, and we're all a work in progress, relatively healed, well-integrated person, then the substance of what they're conveying to the people who come to them for readings will have more relevance, will have more meaning, will have more validity, right? So we just wanted to touch on those points because we're going to go into a deep dive here in the second segment. So you members are in for a treat. Evie, could you tell our listeners and viewers how they could find your work?
Okay, well, it's simple. EveLorgan.com or AlienLoveBite.com is my website, is actually a better place. I don't really do a lot of social media, although there is an Alien Love Bite Facebook group, but I don't go often on platforms that I know now are controlled and censored. So it's plus I don't have time. Okay, let's just face it. So, but you can always email me through the contact form on my website if you have questions or if you want to do a session or a consultation. So that's the best way. And then, of course, both of my books are still available through alibris.com, and the Kindle version is still available through Amazon for the Love Bite. So The Dark Side of Cupid is only available through, I think, Barnes & Noble and Alibris now. So, yeah, but you could always email me for that information.
And if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard Show, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see the members at the top of the next segment.